Welcome back to Discourse, the weekly occult and esoteric podcast hosted by myself, Abimon the Great, and Dr. Anna Stone. This week, we're discussing the anatomy of a magic circle. We'll be dissecting famous demon summoning, angel summoning, and planetary magic circles, so you will be able to read them and construct your own personal to your practice. Breathe in, young magus, and let the work begin. Two, one. All right, welcome back to Discourse. This week we're going to be discussing magic circles with myself, Abimon the Great, joined as always by Dr. Anna Stone.
Hello.
Yeah. And so we're going to be discussing basically how to read a magic circle, the technical details of magic circles, why we use them, how they function, that kind of thing. So we're going to start off, we're going to be talking a little bit about like the history of them. Are they essential? But we're going to teach you how to read magic circles. So we're going to go over the magic circles from the Ars Goetia. We're going over magic circles as featured in Drawing Spirits into Crystals. The most complex magic circle you're probably going to see, which is the Sigillum Dei, which comes from John Dee made it famous, but it actually comes from the Sworn Book of Honorius. And at the very end, I'm going to reveal how I construct my own magic circles. So hopefully after we learn how to break down and read magic circles, you can construct your own, which is a pretty powerful exercise because it's a synthesis of basically your entire magical cosmology. So
cool. Yeah, and let's correct it. You're going to teach us because I don't know anything about it. I only know about protective circles, which are not the same thing. So why don't you tell us about the history
of circles? So the magic circles are protective. They're always protective.
Right. Yeah. But you're saying we're learning about how to read circles. So let's go like the history of that.
More complex ceremonial ones. Yeah.
Okay. So tell us about it.
Well, I mean, magic circles, they start off in Mesopotamia, right? So those are like the first records that we have in it. And there's like something that's like really fascinating. The Mesopotamians were absolutely obsessed with demons and spirits. That's how they thought everything functioned. And that kind of like made its way over into Egypt and made its way into Judaism and Abrahamism, which is why when you look at magic that is downstream of those currents, instead of them having an operative like prana or life force or chi, they usually assign and attribute everything to spirits. So the Mesopotamians originally, they would do these magic circles, and they're very simple, and they're just circles of flower. And a lot of times they would put them around like women when they were in childbirth to protect them from these demons known as Liliths that would come and kill the kids.
Okay.
So like the intense demonology that we have today that comes in Judeo-Christianity, a lot of it traces all the way back to this Mesopotamian practice where these Mesopotamians were trying to protect themselves from these evil spirits, right?
Okay. That's interesting. And then when's the next occurrence of these being written about?
Well, it evolves from there, but I mean, mostly in most magical practice, like in Wicca or Satanism, right? We see those like really simple magic circles. We usually make them out of salt, right? And it's a protective thing.
Well, that's what I'm familiar with.
Yeah. So these are the most simple thing that you can make. And these actually work because it is a symbol of protection. But you usually want to use something that's earthen for these circles, right? So today we use salt for these circles. But the Mesopotamians originally used flour.
Chalk.
Chalk works too. Something that's representing the earth when you're making these physical circles.
Right.
And so when you see those pentagrams in the circles in the movies, that's kind of the same thing. And these magic circles are always going to work. So when we use magic circles, at least protective ones, we don't actually physically draw them most of the time,
right? Never until I met you done that. Yeah.
Yeah.
So always used it in my mind's eye of my own aura just being reinforced or extending out farther.
Yeah.
Than it does. Because it, you know, it extends about 6 feet out, everybody's biofield, whatever you want to call it, about 6 feet out and, you know, from you, which I thought it was weird during COVID when they were like 6 feet, you know, I was like, huh,
oh yeah,
interesting. But that it does pose a problem because, you know, if it's 6 feet out, every time you're encountering somebody else, you're also encountering that person's energy field, right? So
yeah,
I could see how, I know it bothers me just with people mm-hmm. in general. So yeah, I guess some negative spirits are definitely not something I want around. Although I typically do magic without casting any circle.
Yes.
Typically.
So I'm pretty, there's like, when I cast a circle, it's specifically if I know I'm entering into an astral realm mm-hmm. or I'm dealing with spirits. When I work with deity, which is how a lot of people operate, they'll have a patron god or goddess right. that yeah. they do magic with. I don't think magic circles are necessary then.
I never yeah. do that.
Yeah.
Do that. I the only time I've ever used them is with you.
Yes.
I've never seen the need previously.
Well, so yeah, so it,
even
it,
though I do what some may say is called like baneful magic, that's my specialty.
Yeah.
I never have protected myself from it. It's never been needed. However, with you, it has been needed.
Yes, it
as
has.
We found out, as I found out.
Yeah, so I was I used to be heavily into ceremonial magic, just because I loved the aesthetic and it was so extra and that kind of thing. I loved all the tools
fancy.
And yeah, it was yeah. just like so fancy and everything. And when I got disillusioned with it, I was like, okay, I'm gonna try to strip away everything. And that's when I got curious about like, do I actually need a magic circle? Does this actually do anything?
Yeah. Okay.
So as I was like stripping away all the extras and the fluff from my ritual practice, I was able to whittle it down to like what actually is magically essential. But we did an experiment where
I didn't know I was part of this experiment at the time.
Oh, you didn't?
No, you didn't. I didn't know you didn't do a circle.
Oh, I thought I asked you. I asked you, I was like, should we cast a circle? And
if you did, I don't remember, but yeah. like, I just know that I didn't really put it together either right away.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was you. I think
had
you
to
said
point it.
It
out afterwards, but we did an experiment where we conjured a chin and
the
without
first one,
a circle.
Right? Was yeah, it the first yeah. or second one?
Yeah. The first lunar chin that we conjured was, we did it without a magic circle. And my reasoning to this was like, this was a celestial djinn, and it was from a different culture. It was from, you know, the Arabic tradition. And so, from my understanding, that the djinn don't really respond to European, like ceremonial magic.
Right.
That's what I've always kind of understood about it. So we tried to do it without the magic circle, and you immediately got mobbed by basically all spirit fauna in the area. There was right. like the dead showed up.
There was like
multiplicity
yeah.
of djinn, astral entities.
They were all like yelling at me, like trying to get my, like to talk to me or whatever yeah. it was. And I just was like, oh my gosh, it was too much.
Yeah.
Right? Didn't we have to come out of it?
Yeah.
Or something?
We
yeah.
had to. It was
because
too
it
much.
Was like, I couldn't hear anything yeah. anymore. It was too loud. Yeah, that was a little crazy, but I didn't understand that it was from that.
Yeah, no, it was like so funny because I've been practicing for so long and it felt like such like a rookie mistake because we got out of it.
Yeah.
And you said something, you were like, that was like so weird, like all these things, you know, there was so much stuff around me trying to get my attention. And like, I immediately was like, we didn't cast a circle, you know?
And I was like oh, wait, what?
Yeah.
Wait, that really matters.
I was kind of surprised
because
too.
When I do magic, typically I'm not asking for, hey, come talk to me.
Yeah,
personally.
Yeah,
the only time I've ever done that kind of is with you. Like uh-huh. I have never you know this, like I never attempted to communicate with any kind of thing
yeah
previously, ever. Never even crossed my mind. Maybe in readings for clients when they want you know, they're hoping that they can connect with a loved one, but like that's usually not even, it's usually that loved one's already come and talked, already been in my house or something. You know what I mean? Like they show up before I have the appointment and then I realize why they're there.
Yeah.
So it didn't seem connected to magic. Uh-huh. It just seemed connected somehow to the fact that I can read tarot and meet people for that. You know what I mean? Like it didn't seem like, oh, this is something I could do on command.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
So I never tried because who was I trying to contact, right? So, yeah, I didn't know that that would be needed because I didn't think about it in that sense. Like, if they're somewhere else, they can't really, you know, I mean, again, I used to believe that wholeheartedly, and I still struggle with it, that this was all just aspects of the psyche and not actual external energy that actually belongs somewhere else. I really didn't, like, it's really hard for me to reconcile the fact that that is the case, not the case, because, you know, it just makes so much sense scientifically to me, like, and stuff, but as I've learned, it's not the case.
Well, yeah, I thought that whole experience, I mean, lucky, like, nothing, like, super bad happened, I think.
Enough.
Yeah.
I saw enough. And then there's been enough that's been given to me that I then you were able to verify that exists somehow in antiquity, which is again insane to me. So, you know, like it can't be, so it can't be, that rules out it being some aspect of my psyche.
Yeah, well, that was I think that experiment kind of pointed to there are certain magical practices that are an absolute necessity, you know.
Yeah, it
because
was
one of the things that we hear a lot from a certain other camp of magic is that, you know, you don't need any of it, you know, like you can just, you know, if you're good enough in your head, you don't need any of the stuff.
I mean, but, you don't in my experience, but you should use it. Yeah. You don't, maybe don't need it, but like that's also inviting in a whole bunch of
maybe if you're
chaos.
Siddhartha,
so maybe it's chaos Gautama, magic that doesn't and you've think been you need enlightened. It.
I don't know.
Who doesn't think you need it?
Well, it's funny. Yeah, I mean, you do hear it from chaos magic a lot, but it's funny because chaos magicians seem to be the most infested with astral leeches.
Are like, they?
Yes.
You know, I think that's true.
They always have like a like grimy vibe to them.
I think, well, I mean, I'm thinking about the people in my life that claim that, and I'm like,
They've
always calamities
got
happening.
A little unstable.
Very
and
unstable.
Have a very grimy vibe to them. It's like, maybe you guys should.
Or just use like the, that kind of hippie vibe. Like, you know, like this kind of like, or anarchists. They're like anarchists a little bit. Like,
well, I think of chaos magic as like the punk rock of magic.
It is. Yeah, I would say so. But it's funny because I've been doing that my whole life without knowing that that's what it was. And then I was like, never mind. I don't want to associate.
Principles.
Yeah, I mean, it's just like you don't need all the tools, right? Like, I've always thought that. Yeah. Those are all just to get you in that vibe.
Well, it's like anarchism. It's like, you know, the philosophy, it's there, but in practice, it's...
Yeah.
But it's kind of messy.
It's messy. Yeah. I mean, I think most magic is somehow... It's messy. Yeah. Like, I mean, it is. Because there's so many things that go into it. The magic circle is just containing one aspect of magic that could be problematic. But there's other aspects, like, you know, how you word things. For instance,
yeah, that's one that I've been focusing on a lot lately.
Me too. Because if you don't account for absolutely anything and everything that can go wrong, it will. will show up that way. I know the hard way recently, but magic circle wouldn't help me with that.
No, it wouldn't. So I think one of the things that I noticed the most, because there's times, so I only conjure maybe like 2-3 times a week, right?
Only that's most people. Well,
I'm on a lull right now, but when I'm in the swing of
because
things,
we're just doing exhausted, it like every day.
But when I'm in my regular routine, I conjure like maybe 2-3 times a week. But then the daily practice is working with deity, working with planets, and so I don't cast a circle during those. But sometimes I'm in the middle of doing this deity work, or and I split second decide I'm gonna call on some spirits, and I'll forget to cast the circle before I do that, And if I don't do that, that's when stuff gets in. That's okay. mostly astral entities. That's when those things come in and masquerade as, like, you've seen me a few times. I'll be in here and then all of a sudden, like, my vibe changes and I'm like running around and I'm purifying and cleaning stuff. And that
I do.
Kind of thing.
You've been in here and I've been in the liver or the den or something watching TV or doing some art. And all of a sudden, the house vibe gets off. And I'm like, what did he do?
Yeah.
Remember that one time recently, actually, where I was like, what did you do? You came out and I'm like, what did you do? And you're like, what? And I was like, what did you do? And you're like, I was just conjuring some spirits. I'm like, God damn it, dude. I felt that. Like, I could tell.
Well, that was the one that was pretending it was an angel, right?
Right.
Yeah.
And I knew. I was like, something's off. And I knew immediately something was off. And that was weird. You didn't do a circle for that one.
Yeah, I forgot to cast a circle on that one. Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
And I didn't know what you were doing in here. I just knew. Because
it was a split second. It was a split second decision. I was in the middle of meditation. And then I was like, you know, I want to talk to the spirit. And so I just called on the spirits. And what happens is that when I don't cast the circle, when I don't have it, these astral things will beat the spirit to it and try to pretend to be the spirit.
Yes.
They're not the smartest though, so I can usually sniff them out pretty quickly.
So, and that's the thing, is discernment again is key, but also magic.
But they don't feel like I feel sick around them, right? Like I don't like the vibe that they bring with
and
them.
And then recently I did magic with you in the other room. And you were able to pinpoint exactly when I had done a certain thing in that because of the feeling that you got. And I didn't cast a circle for that one either.
Oh, was it? That was...
That was recent.
Yeah, you're removing something bad, right? Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
That made me sick. That's weird. I get nauseous around...
Negative stuff,
yeah.
Yeah, because you're sensitive. Yeah, you're sensitive to it.
My stomach sense.
I know. You knew exactly. You're like 5 minutes ago.
I know. I marked it down when I started feeling it. I checked the time because I was like, I'm going to ask her if she did something.
Yeah. And I did. I had literally done something at that exact moment. Yeah. But I didn't do magic circle. Why? Because I'm asking for something to go away. Right.
Yeah.
If I was I'm asking for anything that's here around us to go away. So I'm not going to do a magic circle for that. They're already here. It's already in my energy field. It's already causing a problem. So there's no reason for it then, right? However, going forward, it is important because we don't want it coming back, right? Like,
Of course. Yeah.
So, and this is also like magic circles aren't just for when you're doing magic practice like this, like to bring something into you or by you. It's also for your property. Like you can also, and we have done this and we have to continue to do it constantly, right?
Yeah, we should do an episode on wording properties because I like doing that.
I know you do.
I do a good job at it, right?
You do a good job at it, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. He goes in and does his thing and it's super legit.
It feels like you're it feels like I'm following around a
priest doing an exorcism.
The home feels like a cathedral afterwards.
Yeah, it does. It's got like your sensor and like saying all these stuff. And then I come in with my like witchcraft shit and I'm like craziness.
We
like,
get it all dirty again.
Yeah, no, get it. No, it's just a second layer for different vibes, I guess.
No, it's good. No, it works. Yeah.
Yeah. But they're not permanent.
What, the magic circles? No, right. they're not permanent. I mean, the physical ones can be they work like when you power them, they can last until you break it, until you leave the circle, right?
I mean, I think like any magic, it's not permanent. If you're doing something to sustain a result, like you have to keep doing it over time, right? Yeah. It will break down over eventually.
Yes.
But I just have a hard time. So maybe you can elucidate for me. I have a hard time understanding why on earth a demon, which is allegedly a pretty powerful thing, right? That can like possess people and cause them to like crawl on the fucking ceiling and
I
shit.
I don't think they're as powerful as
there's
people
that
give them credit for.
There was a case recently in the news, in goddamn, I just looked this up the other day. but it was, I think, 2007. And there is testimony from the Department of Family and Children's Services.
Oh, that was in Flint.
Was it Flint?
Yeah.
Ammon, I think, or something like that. The yeah. name is Ammon
Flint,
case.
Flint, Michigan. It was the little kid.
Yeah.
Or the 7-year-old kid.
There
or whatever.
Was multiple kids. Yeah. There was a family, like a whole family.
Yeah.
DCFF came in and they saw this kid doing stuff that's not
yeah.
humanly possible. They took him to a hospital where the police and hospital staff and also family services saw this kid climb up the wall, go on the ceiling, and then jump down and attack his girl. Like, it's you can read about it.
Yeah,
I think that's powerful. I'm sorry. I'm just saying that whatever got that kid,
yeah.
if that is a supernatural, I don't know what else it would be unless he suddenly developed Vanderwall's like energy, mm-hmm. like, you know, lizards and shit that can climb on walls. Okay.
Yeah.
How is he doing that? That's a powerful entity that can take over someone's body. So if that's true,
uh-huh.
how the hell is a circle drawn with whatever it is gonna do anything? Like, I have a hard time with this. So explain how it works. Why the hell would a demon care about that stuff?
Okay, so the spirit realm seems to operate off the same type of logic that, like, cartoon logic that dreams operate off of, you know?
Okay.
Like, I don't know what it is, but it just some, like, it's some Looney Tunes, Wile E. Coyote stuff, you know? And I don't know why it works that way. This was like, this is the mystery to me too, you know? But it also has to do with, I mean, there is an aspect of it that has to do with belief, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's a large part of it. And when you perform an action, right? Action is a belief, like...
acted out. Yeah, like...
Yeah, acted out. Yeah, yes, exactly. Like it's enforcing it. And what we know about the chain of manifestation that's so important to us in magic, that everything follows action. Action is the very first principle. And that's why we perform ritual when we do magic, right?
Okay.
Because the fire, water, air, earth, action, reception, intellect, into manifestation, right?
Okay.
So everything has to start from action. So just by putting down that circle, without even thinking about it, with no motivation, you put down that circle. Because that's something that you do. You are powering it magically.
Right.
Just by taking the action.
Or charging it, whatever, yes. Yeah. Okay.
So, I mean... the action is in there, then there's the belief in the circle. But, I mean, it's not just the belief, because we conducted that experiment.
Yeah.
You didn't believe that the circle was necessary.
I did
and
not.
It was. It turned out right. It was. So there is something important about that circle. I have not cracked that code, you know?
I mean, I guess, yeah, I don't know either. It's like, because clearly the Vatican has a, like, you know...
yeah.
The grip on the whole exorcism thing. Yeah. And there's a whole series of ritual that's performed and it works somehow.
Yes.
Right? Whereas other denominations, not so much. So the belief in it or their conviction for it, maybe? I'm not sure. But why are... so in these magic circles, like... let me see. You have given me a couple here to look at.
Yes.
They're pretty intricate, right? So
yeah, wanted to go over the complex ones. So I wanted to talk about the simple ones. And the thing is, like, you don't need to do a complex magic circle. You don't need to.
No.
But if you want to do some, like, crazy magic where you're, you know, conjuring djinn, you're pulling a spirit into a location, you're having these conversations with these things. Complex circles help with that.
Is this complex, this one here?
Yeah, so that's going to be probably one of the most popular. I'll put it up on the screen.
Yep.
But the first circle that we're looking at is the Circle of Solomon, and it's from the Lemageddon, Ars Goetia, and it's used in demon summoning, right?
Okay. And I'm curious.
Yeah.
Just, I want to know the answer to this question.
Yes.
Lately, I've been hearing,
uh-huh.
I don't know if I told you this or not, but I was listening to a podcast from some scholars recently talking about this, and they're saying that it's absolute nonsense. They're saying that the Solomon's text is absolute nonsense. It was compiled by a whole bunch of different people, not anywhere near the time that it's supposed to be written, etc.
It's not from Solomon.
But it's not even supposed to be, like, none of it is accurate at all. So I'm wondering how many people that you know that have actually conjured demons using this method, using these circles that have been successful and gotten whatever they need and actually have proof of life for that.
I think most ceremonial magicians have done this at some point.
So that it wouldn't be about
the accuracy of text. This is like the entry level of ceremonial magic. Yeah, I know.
I was I was so disappointed when I read that text. I was like, this is fan fiction. Like,
oh,
in my
you're
opinion.
Talking about the Testament of Solomon. Yeah.
I was just, this is lame. I was really underwhelmed. But
So the art, the Lesser Key of Solomon is the Demon Compendium.
Yeah.
And it teaches you how to summon demons and that kind of thing.
Yep.
And that was thought to be almost a parody grimoire.
That's what it seems like.
But there was a grimoire that preceded it that it got most of its inspiration from. It was the Pseudo Monarchia Daemonium.
Okay.
And then the grimoire that got its inspiration from a bunch of older medieval grimoires. There's the Cambridge Necromancy Manual. One of the big ones, we're going to talk about it a little later in this episode, is the Book of the Offices of Spirits, which is like a real deep cut. Super deep cut in the demon summoning grimoiric tradition. But they got it from like a bunch of, it was an evolution of like these demon summoning grimoires from the Renaissance all the way up until it hits the Ars Goetia, which is basically supposed to be a kind of parody of demon summoners, but then becomes like the standard textbook.
Yeah, that's so weird. Okay, so I'm not crazy. Okay, thank you for clearing that up, because I'm like, this seems like very watered down. Like,
it's pretty pretty consistent though, and I mean, like, this, the thing I love about the Circle of Solomon is it checks out, and it may look complex, but it's very simple and it makes a ton of sense.
Okay.
Right?
So what are all these things in here? Like, there's so much stuff.
Yeah. So obviously, the big circle is going to be the circle that the magician stands in front of or stands inside. Excited. Right.
Okay.
And then the triangle outside the circle is where you are conjuring the demon into. Right.
Okay, yeah.
And you're going to see this a lot with these magical evocation systems where you're trying to get a spirit to manifest. Is you're going to have a circle that the magician is in that is the protective circle, and then outside of it there's going to be a triangle or another circle that the most of the time it's a triangle that the spirit manifests inside. But you're going to see it's facing east, the front of it. In magic circles, when you're doing conjuration, you always want to be facing east because this faces the sun.
Yes, that's the same in every other witchcraft practice.
So you'll see the Ouroboros, which is the eternal symbol, and you'll see written in Hebrew, right? So I'm just going to read the first line of Hebrew. It says, Eye Keter Metatron Kayot HaKodesh Rashith HaGalgalim. And what this is doing right here is it's outlining a sephirot. So you hear Eye.
Where are you seeing that? Where is that?
That's at the at the beginning of the snake's head. Oh, it's
okay.
In Hebrew.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I can't read that.
So Eye is the personal name of God. Keter is the very first sephirot. Metatron is little Hashem, basically, right? And then you go Chayot HaKodesh. These are going to be a class of angels.
Uh-huh.
Then you're going to do Rashith HaGalim. And these are going to be the wheels, the angels that look like wheels.
Oh, God, those are creepy, yeah.
And then it's going to go all the way down. So you see right there, you have a god name, you have a Sephirot, you have an important archangel, you have a class of angels, and another class of angels, right? So it's outlining this kind of hierarchy.
Yeah, I see.
Then when it goes on to the next one, it's going to go on to the god name associated with Chokmah and the angel associated with it. So it's going to go all the way down, the very last one. It's Shaddai, El Chai, Yesod, Gabriel, Cherubin, Levana, of the moon.
Yep.
Right? So you're going down all the planets, and this is on the in the Boros that is outlining it. And it's outlining all the associations with those planets. Now, in the middle of it, you're going to have four hexagrams, right?
Yes.
And the hexagrams, they can be symbols of the Hermetic axiom, which is as above, so below. You see Adonai, which is a god name that's outside each of those hexagrams that's in each of the cardinal directions. Okay. Adonai is a god name that is associated with his kingship on earth. It's associated with the Shekhinah. It's almost a feminine name for God.
Okay.
It's God on earth, right? It's almost like the god name that you would use to say Mother Earth.
Okay. Okay.
It's associated with the Sephiroth of Malkuth.
Okay.
Which is the very bottom Sephiroth on the tree. It's associated with kingship, his kingdom, that kind of thing. So you see also in the Adonai, there is a Tau. And the Tau is incredibly important in alchemy, in Greek religion. The Tau is representative of the cross, the intersection, the magus is it's the Tau.
The crossroads.
Yeah. So you're seeing right here inside the seven planets, you're seeing the four cardinal directions, the intersection where the heaven meets earth.
Okay.
Adonai is representing the king on earth, right?
Okay.
Now these Maltese crosses that you're going to see, those ones, you're going to see them all over magic circles. They're a kind of decorative piece. They're used as punctuation or to separate things when you're spelling them out in magic circles.
Okay.
You see Alpha, Omega.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the beginning and the end. Yep. In front of the magus, behind the magus, and then it all centers in where the magician is standing. On the outside, you see five pentagrams, and in those pentagrams, you see Tetragrammaton. And Tetragrammaton is the ineffable name, the most on high name, and in that, you're going to see the Tau. In these pentagrams right here, the pentagram, obviously, it has a spirit, fire, water, air, earth.
Yes.
There's a Tau, an intersection of heaven and earth right there. And these are kind of the watchtowers, right?
Yes.
So if you're familiar with the watchtowers in Wicca.
Yes.
So those are where you're going to place your candles. And that's where the, you know, heavenly bodies watch.
Right.
Now, when we get up to the triangle where the demon is going to manifest in it, you see the circle that it's going to be bound in, another magic circle. But outside, there is the triangle. And the triangle is obviously, you know, it represents the tripart aspect. And we understand that the three Trinity. From the divine feminine episodes, this is kind of representing the ability for something to manifest in the material. And then outside on each side, you have Mikhail.
Uh-huh.
And who is Mikhail?
Michael.
Yeah. Okay. So if you're summoning a demon, obviously you
Michael's
want Michael to be the one holding him into place. And then outside of that triangle, there are three more god names, right? So you have Tetragrammaton on the right, which is the ineffable name. Anaphaxaton, which is god of heavenly hosts. And then Primumaton, which is Alpha and Omega again on the bottom. So right there, you see something pretty important. You see outline protecting the magus on the outer part of the circle is the seven planets and the angels associated with them. You see below that the four hexagrams are the cardinal directions, which are also representing the elements that manifestation is made of, right? So you see an almost hermetic cosmology being outlined here.
Because, because there's four of the hexagrams. Yeah, hexagrams. In the middle is the practitioner who's the spirit. That's the spirit. That's the fifth element that's missing from that.
Yeah.
Recipe there. Right, because you can't. Yeah, okay. That makes sense. All right. So, but why are these names important? All of these things. Like, why does this matter?
So,
or does it matter? Does it matter? Is it unique to each culture or is it not?
That's one of the interesting things and something I've been having to get into the nitty gritty of in my personal practice as I've switched over from ceremonial magic to working in celestial Arabic magic, right?
Right.
So obviously all these are heavily Judeo-Christian names.
Right, yeah.
And there's this really weird thing that happens. Another one of those things when you are talking spirits and conjuring spirits, right? It doesn't matter what you believe in. Demons do not like God names.
Oh, apparently not.
They like Judeo-Christian God names, angel names. They do not like them. You can threaten them. It doesn't matter what you believe. It doesn't matter what religion you are, right? Okay. If you walk in, you conjure one of these demons and you are a Norse pagan and you start threatening these demons with Odin, they're not going to respond to it.
Yeah.
You start threatening them with Jewish God names, they lose their shit. You know? And that's like one of the things that's a good way to discern spirits too, to see how they react to God names or angel names, right? If you're talking to a spirit and you don't necessarily know what it is, you can quickly isolate it as maybe some kind of Judeo-Christian demon by tossing a God name in there.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, right. My one experience, though, was interesting. For some reason, they're attached to that.
It's very strange, especially since some of the goetic demons, their names come from different religions.
Right.
Yeah. So it's incredibly strange to me how that works and what the function behind it is. But one of the things that dealing with jinn, the jinn don't respond to certain Judeo-Christian God names. Demons will respond to Jesus or Christ, right?
Okay.
They'll freak out. They don't like that.
Yeah.
Right? Jinn won't. They don't care.
Yeah.
If you bring that name up, right?
Yeah. And how do you know they don't care? What do they do? Nothing?
There's no response? There's no response. It's like I'm talking to a normal person. However, I can use... There's certain Jewish God names that the jinn do respond to if I'm trying to threaten them, and certain Jewish God names that they don't.
Interesting.
They respond to a lot of the Arabic God names as well, even though the lore is a lot of them don't believe in religion, right? So,
yeah,
very strange.
They believe in their own thing.
Yes.
Their own hierarchy of stuff.
Yeah.
They're separate. Discerning
this has been really difficult coming from as a Western.
Well, hasn't it all
magician.
Kind of shown us that hasn't it kind of brought it to the forefront a little bit that each one of these systems of belief has a little piece of the puzzle?
Yes.
Right? And they're not all of them, not all of it is there in either one of those systems, but combined.
Yes.
Right?
Yes, and that is what we are learning tonight on this episode.
Yeah.
That's why we're going over a few. See, if you've been watching this podcast this past season, we are digging up the fragments of the Scroll of Isis. So we're giving you the different pieces, right?
Right.
And that's it is scattered amongst
all of it. It is scattered. And
I
think that's on purpose, by design, because I still believe, I've been saying this for a long time, and maybe not on our podcast, but on my old podcast that I have. I've been saying it for years. It's been kind of if we all were able to figure it out, we'd poof cease to exist, right? Because there'd be no point in being human anymore. So it's scattered throughout all of these ancient practices and things like that, so that it's harder to get to that point, you know?
Yeah.
So that we stay here longer to learn whatever the crap lessons we all learn on this hellhole is, and then then we leave and go somewhere else or not, I guess. I don't really know. But yeah, I've felt like that was the case for a long time. And in our practice together, it's been reinforcing that idea.
Yeah, no, 100%. Because it's like where we get the missing pieces, it comes from different places, different cultures, different time periods, that kind of stuff.
Right.
And then once we get the missing piece, then all of a sudden we see it in all the other ones.
Right.
You know?
But when we get the missing piece, you always say, I didn't want this. What are you telling me? Why is this? This is not what I asked you.
Yeah.
And you think it's not
important.
It's
got a ring. It's got a ring, you know?
It does. It
takes a while. Like it comes in. It's like a little seed, and it's gotta sprout first.
I know. Yeah. That's why. Like in the beginning, I used to get like frustrated. Like, oh my gosh, I just told you this. I got this information. You're like, it's not what I was asking.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay. Now I just am like, whatever. In a couple of weeks, you'll figure it out. Yeah. And every time it happens,
very used to this process.
Yeah,
now.
I am very. I think every I got used to it faster. Yes.
Every time it happens, I always feel so stupid too. I'm just like, why do I keep doing this? You know?
Yeah, I used to be like, oh God, I didn't do a good job doing my stuff. And then I learned quickly, like, no, it just takes him a minute to like,
yeah, I know. I'm
just to synthesize
dense.
It
yeah,
or, exactly. for the other piece to pop up for you.
Yeah.
That does, you know?
Well, yeah, because I have to go through a verification process because I'm always like extremely concerned about getting like false information or
misleading,
basically being an absolute maniac and just being crazy, you know. And so it has
it
to
might be a little crazy.
Yes, it's it okay. has to like ring in a few different places for me to be like, I get it. Okay,
yeah.
You know?
I know.
Because if it's like a one-off thing, I'm just gonna be like, maybe I'm just losing my mind, you know? Like,
yeah,
maybe
no,
I'm just
I think that all
a nut job.
The
maybe
time.
I'm forcing this, you know?
I think that all the time.
Yeah.
Until you come back and say, oh my gosh.
Yeah, and then
then I get scared.
Yeah, then it gets scary.
Like, I'm like,
that's
wait,
when
what?
It gets scary. Then that's when the existential crisis hits.
Yeah, and that's when it goes back to the whole, how is this real? How is it happening? Like, it's always, I love it though. It's kind of exciting.
I love it.
But
it's very exciting. Yeah.
It is, but it's also it's extremely like terrifying being, at the same time.
It's like Sherlock Holmes, you know?
It is. Yeah. It's like, but you're never done. That's the problem. It's never over.
I know, it's never over.
There's no like
sometimes
end point.
You're like nauseous. You're like, I want off the ride.
Just let me go back to the mundane things. But then, you know,
I know. I'm already thinking, like, I took a little break because I lost it there. Like I haven't conjured anything since we got back.
You did great. Okay.
No, since we got back, I haven't conjured anything.
I know, but
I know, but yeah, and it's like today I'm already like planning. I'm like, I'm gonna conjure like 5 days in a row. Like I'm like,
oh, God.
I'm gonna burn myself
there
out
we go.
Again. Yeah.
Yep.
No, I can't.
Exciting.
I'm not gonna do it. I'm not gonna do it.
Yeah. Okay, so that one was the Solomonic
circle. So that is the circle you people use in Solomonic magic.
It's old.
Tried and true.
Yeah.
It's like 17th century.
Yeah.
It's tried and true, and it looks complex, but it's very simple and elegant in its function. And it's a great way to like go a, like a great starting place, right?
Okay.
In order to understand circles, I think this is like the circle that if you break down this circle and you can compare other circles.
Now,
to
do you have like these circles work for things other than demons?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you can they're multi.
Purpose. But this just comes from a book of demon summoning,
okay.
Right?
Just
but
that.
So, but you can use this to conjure any kind of spirit that you want. There's just going to be angels everywhere, so.
And those aren't fun.
Yeah.
Really. They're not nice.
No.
And people think that they're
angels
these angelic things.
Like
they
people.
Don't like people.
No.
And they're not nice to
most
us.
Spirits don't like people.
I wonder why. I can't imagine why.
Because they're always calling them up and asking for dumb crap, you know?
Oh, like, my God. Yeah. Can you imagine? Like, right now, in this moment in time, there are people doing dumbass shit with this right now.
Yeah.
Exactly. Right now. I can only imagine. Yeah. You know how I am with people in general. So, like, I can... that would be hell for me.
But like,
that would be a hell
within,
for me.
Within, like, Jewish literature, at least, the angels are not fans of humans. They're basically like, why do you, like... To God, they're like, why do you like them? You know, like they suck.
They're like your little like,
yeah,
cognitively challenged little child.
Yeah, they're like, we're way better.
Like,
than
be nice,
them.
Be nice.
Yeah, no, my experience. I mean, like, I call upon angels for protection, and my experience with angels is they're just bulldozers of God's will, and so if your will is not in line with God's will, and you call them up and you ask them for some dumb crap.
Yeah.
You know, it's not gonna
like it's not gonna it, go
it's
well
not
for
gonna
you.
Go well for
and
you.
It's not like it's just not gonna happen. It's gonna like the opposite thing's gonna happen to make you look dumb. Like I swear, they like to get them over on us. I think it's like their way of kind of defying a little bit. But yeah, they're creepy, and they're scary looking. The one I saw was scary looking. It was
what,
not...
the one in here?
Yeah.
That wasn't an angel.
No, the one in the room.
Oh, okay.
The other room. Yeah. Not in here. I didn't see that one. I just know it was like gross.
Yeah, there was something masquerading as an angel. It didn't look too good.
No, it wasn't. No. It was just a blackness. Whatever. Like they all look like the same. This one, now the next one we have is a newer.
So this one is the Trithemius Table of Practice. And this magic circle is a little bit different because you don't actually get inside of it. It sits on your table and you get a spirit into it with a crystal ball. So this is be a great circle if you're doing a seance.
Okay, right? Yeah.
And so this comes from a cult technique known as drawing spirits into crystals.
Okay.
And it's called the Trithemian Table of Practice, but it comes from a book, I think it was published in 1801 or 1802 by a man named Francis Barrett. It's called The Magus.
Uh-huh.
And it was like really influential on ceremonial magic. But this technique specifically is seeing a revival right now through like Frater Ashen Hassan.
Uh-huh.
He's been responsible for kind of like tearing the technique apart and reconstructing it authentically and like really pushing boundaries on it. Friend of the show, Rufus yes. Opus.
Yeah.
This is like one of his favorite methods. He's responsible for making it popular again too.
Yep.
And then there's somebody that like kind of floats around those spheres, a blogger named The Digital Ambler. So I've got Rufus Opus's Trithemius Table of Practice, and then right next I have the Digital Ambler's Table of Practice. And this one's really simple. So on the outside, you are going to see in Hebrew on Rufus's circle the planetary angel's name, right?
Right.
And that's going to be in Hebrew, and then you're going to see the sigil. And it's going to be all seven of the planets. And then inside, you're going to see something called the Four Kings.
Uh-huh.
And the Four Kings comes from Goetia and demon summoning. But you're going to see Asian, Oriens, Amaemon, and Paimon, right? And what the Four Kings do is they basically act as the gatekeepers for the material world. So they're the ones that raise the gate.
They're the Papa Legbas?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
So whereas if... We're thinking about what those hexagrams with Adonai functioned as in the Solomon circle. This is what the Four Kings do.
Okay.
And obviously, Paimon's a demon, right?
Yeah.
So the Four Kings are thought to be, are demon kings, basically.
Okay.
And I tried to trace the concept of the Four Kings back as early as I could. This was like a few years ago. Remember, I was obsessed with this when we first met? And I traced it back to a book named The Book of the Office of Spirits. And it basically claims that in order to gain favor with these four kings, that you have to bind a bunch of lesser demons and then you can conjure them and then they'll work for you, right?
Okay.
But so in Rufus Opus's, he has the four kings, which are representing the gates into the material world. And then we see that triangle... Once again, that the spirit has to go inside. On the top is the Maltese cross, left pentagram, right is going to be a hexagram with a yud in it. And the yud is the first part. Tetragrammaton is the active principle. It is the beginning of everything. It is almost representative of Kether. So this is a very simple magic circle, right? You just have planets, four kings for the earth, triangle, and then you put your crystal in the middle and the spirit comes into the crystal. Now if we go over on the right to the Digital Ambler, his name is Sam Block. He has the same thing, but he's using a different alphabet. The alphabet he's using is Agrippa's celestial alphabet, and the celestial alphabet is kind of an oversimplification of like it's a one-to-one transliteration of Hebrew, but it's a bunch of talismanic letters from the talismanic alphabets. Agrippa kind of consolidated them into one. But if you go into the Arabic literature, you're going to see a lot of those symbols scattered across all the tomes, right?
And then his has the angels.
Yes. And so he, instead of using the four demon kings, he uses the angels of the cardinal directions, right?
Okay.
So those are very, very simple magic circles, and these are great ones that, like, if you're at home and you want to use one, like, get your crystal ball, either draw one of these out, print them out. But what you see, once again, seven planets down to the four into a triangle, spirit appears, right?
Yeah.
So the spirit is bound by the four kings and the seven planets.
Okay.
Yeah.
So then we have Agrippa's.
Yes. So now we're going to Agrippa's, and I actually...
Okay. Yeah. So what do we got going on?
Getting disillusioned again.
Yeah.
So I was like, oh, I'm going to pull up Agrippa's magic circle. I've actually never, like, sat down and looked at this and broken it down until I was preparing for this episode.
Yep. And what did you find?
That is nonsense.
Yeah.
That's absolute nonsense. It's redundant. It's random. Anyways, we're going to... All this doesn't make any sense to me. Maybe I'm the dummy here, but...
So, I mean, we already know that his magic squares...
Well, we know his magic squares are wrong. Were kind of weird.
Yep.
But anyways, so this one is basically just all god names. But some of the god names don't even make sense. So on the outer ring, you've got Jehovah, Tetragrammaton, this Yaya, which it would be... I think that's a YVH or... YHH or something. It's a tetragrammaton permutation. And then Emmanuel, which is God with us. Inside, we have Messiah. I wasn't able to figure out... These look like Greek words, but I wasn't able to figure out exactly what they are. And then on the inside, we have Agla, which is conjugation for Thou, O Lord, our mighty forever. Elohim, which is a... which is an angel, Jessamon, which is an angel, Adonai, which is a god name. So there's no really rhyme or reason to that. Yeah. And then on the inside, we have another Agla, Thou, O Lord, our mighty forever. Hexagram representing the Hermetic axiom, which is as above, so below. So this, whereas the other ones, we were seeing this kind of like
hierarchy
that's like kind of boiling down.
Yeah, this is not this is just
is not making any sense to me at all.
Yeah, okay. Makes well, yeah.
Yeah. So I don't know anyone that's used maybe it. Somebody out there can give me some insight onto this circle. Yeah. Maybe I'm just being crazy.
But this but next one, holy
this
crap.
This next one. This is
this one. You're putting
really
these up, right? So people can see
yes,
what
I'm
talking
putting
about.
Them up. Okay. Yeah. So
this one's a nut.
Yeah, this is one of the craziest ones you're ever gonna see. And
like way too complicated.
Yeah,
and like,
spending some time with it is actually pretty fascinating.
But like you have to draw this out, like, oh my god.
Yeah. So most people, so this is another table of practice.
40 chambers.
40 chambers. So this the Sigillum De Ameth was made famous by John Dee and Edward Kelly. And what they would do is they would put the crystal in the middle of this thing and Edward Kelly would scry and
inside the circle.
Yeah.
He'd be in there?
No, they wouldn't stand in it. There was a
oh, this was just
ball.
Where the crystal
yes,
ball
they'd
was. Okay.
They put it on the table, and then they put the crystal ball on the table.
Okay,
right?
I was thinking you had to like draw this on the floor. So, I was like, damn.
Yeah, so this was how they got in touch with their spirits. The first time we see this thing pop up, though, in a kind of lesser form is in the Swarm Book of Honorius, which was the grimoire I was talking about. It was named after a pope.
Yep.
But it was originally because it's seven, it's a heptagon.
Okay.
It was originally for the square of Venus and Venus, the planet.
Okay.
But John Dee, obviously seven is also the classical planets. So John Dee used this and he was a cryptographer and he made this crazy. There is so much that is going on in here. So on the very outer ring, we have these 40 chambers, and in these 40 chambers, this is basically the magic square, and it's
laid out
in a circle, and then every time there's like a double A, it gets deleted and consolidated into one because the angels told John Dee to do that.
Okay.
But like, for example, if you look at the very top on the right side, there's a T, a capital T, right?
Yeah.
Then you're supposed to go, and there's a four above it.
Yeah.
You go over four spaces. One, two, three,
T
four.
T and nine?
T, no, over, wait. It's the H right there. So, and then that wants you to go over to 22. And so if you follow all that, it's like a decoder on the back of a cereal box to where you get all the planetary angel names from them. They're all scrambled up, and it's from the magic square, right?
Okay.
On the inside is a, right below it is a secret name of God made with these like crazy sigils. That's Galathog that he got from the magic square itself. So the G, the weird circle, the weird H,
I see it. Yeah.
The T. So that's going to say Galathog, which is a secret name of God that apparently the angels don't even know. So good way to trick him, I guess. The outer, below that, the rainbow heptagon, those are more planetary angels that are got, that he got out of the magic square. And then below that, there are names of God that are not known to the angels, right?
Okay, yeah.
So these are all like super crazy. And he's getting all of these from the magic square. And then descending from there, the first outer is going to be the Daughters of Light, which is diagonals on the magic square. In the, it starts at the top left and moves down to the bottom right.
Okay.
Sons of Light are diagonals on the magic square, top right to bottom left. Daughters of Daughters, and it goes all the way around in a quaternary procedure, right?
Yes.
And it consolidates all the way down, and you see where the pentagram is. And so if you look at the letters on the outside of the pentagram, you're going to see Sabbatai, which is the sphere of Saturn. Right? Okay. Inside, you're going to get the planetary angels, Agrippa's planetary angels, Zadkiel, you know.
Yep.
And it's going to move to the five until it ends in the center on El Levana, or Levana El, which is the moon. So Saturn is encompassing all the planets in the very, very center principle where the crystal is supposed to go is the moon. The moon is reflecting this entire thing, which is what I think makes this so beautiful. But there's a lot of cryptography that's hidden in this, a lot of gematria that's hidden in this.
Yep.
I just gave a very basic rundown, but you can see once again, this is more leaning on the mathematics, the numerology. It's once again seven planets that are all coming down in a cosmology with all these numbers and focusing into a single point.
Yeah.
Right?
Okay. So I just found out something interesting, though.
Yeah.
Okay. So the name of the secret name.
Yeah.
Galathog.
Yeah.
If you flip that and read it backwards, okay?
Uh-huh.
It breaks down to meaning that these, the Gothic tribe, it's a Gothic tribe.
Yeah.
Of ancient Germanic people, to speak or to tell for the god of fire.
Hmm. Interesting.
In Sanskrit.
Oh, in Sanskrit?
Uh-huh.
Interesting.
Yeah. So, interesting.
Yeah.
I don't
know. No, that, I mean,
just,
that's
I
cool.
like saw it and I was like, oh, I'm going to flip that and see what it says. I just checked it out. And like, so if you break it down into three parts, Goth, tell, and the AG, that all, that's what that means, is like to speak or tell the secrets of the god of fire.
Interesting.
Yeah. FYI.
Yeah.
So.
That's anyways, cool. Yeah. Yes.
I don't know why. I just thought about that and I checked it. That's what it says. So. Okay, maybe they did get something there.
Yeah, the secrets of that. I mean, checks out if you're familiar with their story. You know,
I don't know.
Yeah,
really. I have not. I have the book. I still haven't read it.
Oh my gosh, their story is crazy. You're gonna get real scared when you read that.
What, am I? Ooh, I want to get scared. I like getting
scared.
You're
gonna get real scared.
Great. That sounds like a challenge. Okay, so the next one we have is.
Okay. Well, actually, I think we should take a break
and come
quick
back.
Break and come back.
Adamon's magic circle.
All right.
Okay.
All right. Welcome back from our break. I wanted to keep talking about the Sigillum Dei, though, just because I want to reinforce that he got all of these spirit names out of this magic square, and so this is kind of like tying back to the importance of these squares.
Yeah.
When we talked in the Sefer Yetzirah episode. And I was like, look, if like you really want to break down how to get in contact with these spirits and to really do some occult exploration, some occult experimentation, you're going to have to learn the letters and you're going to have to learn the spirits. And then the god names are also a really important factor here, right? So one of the things that we've seen in all of them is that they're utilizing god names in all of them. And these god names are basically epithets. And there's a lot of like material on the god names. So, I mean, when you read the Bible, God has a ton of different names, right?
Yeah.
And so the Jews specifically, they've gone and they've figured out like what all these different names mean and when you're supposed to use them and how to address them.
Okay.
Or how to like when
you use when you invoke when those you names. Use them.
And they're basically magical formulas, right?
Okay.
So I think the best book, if you want to read more about that from the Jews themselves, is going to be The Gates of Light by a Kabbalist named Gikatia.
Yeah.
There's a very famous wood carving of a like Kabbalist, and he's got the Tree of Life, and it looks like he's like making a potion in it or something.
Okay.
It's a very famous picture. If you've ever seen Googled Kabbalah, it's probably one of the first images that pops up on Google. But it's from that book.
Okay.
Yeah. So the Sigillum Dei itself, though, we are seeing the magic square is being featured heavily in it. D is doing a little bit of his like weird cryptography, but once again, we see god names, planets, all consolidating into one focal point where the spirit is brought into manifestation. And they were colored like this? No, this wasn't. This colored version, this is a really cleaned up and organized version of the original one. The original one that Dee and Kelly were using is very hard to read.
Well, because I was like, this looks like Eastern Star. Like, you know, but
so
inverted.
I think this is, I think this one specifically from the Golden Dawn. So the Golden Dawn was really into Enochian magic. So they took this and organized it, color coded it, and that kind of thing.
Okay, yeah. So I was like, did they have markers? Like, how did they color D&D this? Kelly. I don't know.
It was a colored pencil.
It was colored pencils, the crayons, some Crayolas, yeah. okay, but now we got this next one.
Yeah, so
this I'm about, fancy one. Oh,
yeah,
is it
it's
like
this
that?
One right
it's
here,
right there.
Actually.
Oh,
yeah.
So. Cool.
So I'm actually going to reveal some grand wizard secrets to you guys on the podcast right now. So this is the magic circle that I specifically use, and it's one that I constructed myself. And the reason that I constructed it myself was because I was able to read the magic circles. And hopefully if you've been following along, if you've been taking notes, I know it's been really technical and dry and that kind of stuff. But if you can see the pattern, then dependent on the magical material that you consume, the philosophy, the grimoires, whatever magical material you consume, you can make your own. And it's, once again, it's scattered all over the grimoires.
Yeah.
So this, I had these magic circles that I'm specifically using to conjure djinn that are trapped in stars. Right? So there's very specific names and there's very specific squares that I'm using for these. So this is the circle of the greater malefic, who is Saturn. And that is, you know, it's Saturday.
Saturday.
Yeah. So why not? So you're going to see on this circle on the outside, I have the 28 Arabic god names instead of the Jewish. And this one's in English just so it's like easier for everybody to read.
Right. Okay.
But you really want to be using either a talismanic alphabet or a sacred script like Hebrew, Arabic. Arabic is a sacred script. You can use that too. But the sacred scripts have a lot of power. The talismanic scripts have a lot of power. And if you develop your own alphabet, it has a lot of power too. But we have the 28 god names, and that's obviously representing the 28 lunar phases, right? So the below that, we're getting into the sphere of Saturn, and those are, because I'm conjuring Saturnian djinn with that, I'm using epithets of Saturn that are done in different languages,
right?
So Saturnus, Kaven, And all of these names have been extracted from Arabic grimoires. I've noticed these names in different grimoires and realized what they were doing. And because I was noticing this and I knew how to construct a circle, I was able to pull that. Below that, you're going to see more names for Saturn, but those Saturn names are assembled with Abjad. And Abjad is basically Arabic gematria, so it would be what they used in their magic squares.
Okay.
Then you're going to have inside of that, you're going to have a square, which is representing, or inside of that, you're going to have those Hebrew letters. And those Hebrew letters specifically, they are for the spirit that commands all the Saturn spirits. And I can't really reveal his name or how to say that, which is why I left it in Hebrew. But you have the square right there, which is representing the cardinal directions. But there's something interesting that happens in Arabic magic is they don't do just the four directions. They do cubes. So there's an above and below as well.
Okay.
So it's not with the Arabs. They don't list it as east, west, north, south. They list it as left, right, up, down. Okay. That kind of thing.
Okay.
And there's something to point out here too, because this direction thing is incredibly important. So like in witchcraft and Wicca, you always have to call it quarters, right? Or you're supposed to.
Yes. Yeah, but
you're gonna see
I stopped doing that like
in the
month one. Yeah.
In the PGM, when you're summoning spirits in PGM spells, you're supposed to be calling the winds.
Yeah.
Right? The directions. Yep. Solomonic magic or European grimoire, you're calling kings or angels associated with the cardinal directions.
Right.
In Arabic magic, they're calling left, right, up, down.
Yeah, because forward, honestly, that makes more sense to me because depending on where you are, you know, there's always going to be a right, left, up, down. There's not always, you're not always going to have, like, that just makes sense. Like, if you're depending on where in space you are, right?
Yes, yes.
There's no east or west. Like, is there east and west in outer space? I don't know.
I don't know either.
I don't think so.
The way that I like to think it when I'm calling on those directional spirits is that I'm building a like a matrix cube with the spirit names or whatever, but I don't know. I like the way that they do it, but that's what the square is representing, and then we have a circle that the spirit is getting bound in. I have the tripart tetragrammaton in the circle. So that's going to be representing the yud, which is going to be the action or the fire, the vav, which is going to be the intellect, that which decides in between, the air principle, and then the he, which is representing both water and earth on the bottom. And then you're going to see on the triangle, I have three god names, right? Tetragrammaton on the right, the ineffable one. The personal name of God, Eye, Esher, Eye, and on the bottom, Adonai, kingship, right? Malkuth, right there.
Okay, yeah.
And then in the middle, there's a few sigils for the spirits of Saturn, talismanic, from the talismanic alphabet. So you can see right here, taking that same concept that we see, we're using this cosmology, right?
Yeah.
And we're using this cosmology to bind the spirit. So it starts with the god names and then it moves into the sphere of Saturn. And then it's going through all of his powers, his epithets, till it gets to his binding spirits. And then those binding spirits are bringing into the center of the circle the spirit that I'm trying to get a hold of.
Okay.
Right?
So after you get these spirits into the circles.
Yes.
How do you get rid of them?
I usually do a license to depart. And like it pretty simple, like, thank you. Cause I usually have conversations with them. Right. I'm usually asking for information. It doesn't normally get too hostile unless I think that they're lying to me. And then
I hear yelling coming from the room.
That's when the knife comes out. Yes.
Yes, it does.
Yeah. So so when that happens, that's a banishing, and the banishing comes with a knife, and you want to drive him out of the northwest. Basically. Yeah, okay. Yeah. So you always, no, northeast, sorry.
Okay.
Yeah. that direction.
See what I mean? About
that direction.
See,
yes.
That's in front, right?
Okay. So you enter, leave the circle in the northeast, and you banish them through the northeast too.
Okay. So, because like in witchcraft or and Wicca, it's always like you cast your circle clockwise, right? And then you uncast counterclockwise, or widdershins, what do they call it?
Yeah.
But then there's like also the difference is like with those kinds of circles, like, you know, things can come and go in them, like animals, kids. Like if you're going to leave, you got to cut a door out in the air, right? You can come out and come back in. These ones, you can't do that. Yeah.
Oh.
Like you're not leaving any doors for them, right? You're keeping them straight. So, but how do you make sure that they leave the whole area and not just the circle?
Well, there's usually a hierarchy that I let them depart in. So basically, the last spirits that are departing are the archangels.
Right.
They're the or like whatever what setting it, watch and whatever's in control. They're the last ones.
To leave. So the bouncers are the last to basically, go. To make sure that they've kicked out the riffraff.
Yeah, but there are So when you like make friends or. Guess I hate saying that. I shouldn't say that.
When you have a good working relationship.
When you have a good working relationship with binding spirits.
Yes.
Right. They make sure that the other spirits fall in line. Right. So you don't really have to worry too much about it.
Or they don't make sure. Like if they don't like you.
Well, yeah, definitely. But so binding spirits are a little more fickle, right? Like if they get mad at you, they'll definitely won't do anything for you. Whereas like
I don't think the
archangels are always pretty reliable, you know?
Right. Yeah. Well, they've got a mission, right? They got like one thing they got to do.
Yeah.
It's kind of their thing. So they just go and then they're gone after that.
Yeah, most of the time. So if I can feel it, like sometimes the vibe's off, right? Like once the ritual's done and if stuff feels grimy, then that's when it gets into a quick purification, a quick banishing.
There's
right?
been a few times where that's happened.
But most of the time they depart and it's usually like, okay, well, you know, appreciate your time. Thank you for talking to me. You know, look forward to talking to you again. You know, you're free to depart now. And they usually depart. Sometimes they'll...
You're like, get me away from this human.
No, but yeah.
I don't know. Be like, I gotta go back and watch my shows. Yes. I don't know what they're doing. But like, I can imagine unless they had some other intention, I guess.
Yeah.
But I don't really think that they're on that same plane as us like that.
No.
Like at all. So
yeah,
it's not something that most people need to worry about, right?
Like So I mean, depending on what you're working with, but.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you're working
the,
with...
The astral things will hang out,
well,
for sure.
Well, because those are lesser.
Yeah, right? Yes. Yeah, they're not... They're like cockroaches, you know? Like, once they're in, they just want to hang out inside. But
and live off the food that is your chaos.
Yes.
Your emotions, yeah.
Yeah. Those totally. Ones...
They're loose.
But so, a consecrated knife, and a knife that's consecrated with a god name, right?
Yeah.
That is, like, one of the... best ways to get something to leave, right?
Yeah,
because you're basically wielding a sharp god name and you wave it at anything and you poke stuff with it or whatever.
Yeah,
there was like one specifically I it was getting out of control, and so I had to bind it into an object and then like stab the object.
When was that? When did this happen?
I don't know. It might have been when you were on your camping trip. I can't remember.
Oh, that's right. Yes.
You weren't there. I remember you weren't there. I don't know if it was that night, though.
Yeah,
I don't think so.
I remember you texted me.
I was using the lamp that night, and I wasn't going to...
Oh, no, that's a different one.
The spirit was the
one.
Lamp. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, so was that...
No, this was a different time, yes.
This is what happens when I leave you alone. Like, you... So you stabbed the thing, and then what happened? It left?
Yeah, it was gone. Mm-hmm.
It's like, oh, he's not fucking around. Yeah, he's being serious. Yeah.
Yeah, so that's why the knife's always a good idea. That's why I love the knife, you know?
I'm glad. I'm glad you love it. It's nice. And so you did consecrate that with the god.
Okay, so I guess I got to take a step back here.
Yeah.
don't be waving a knife out around at every spirit. The way we talk, it sounds like I'm always waving a knife at spirits.
Don't it's been like twice now we mentioned it, I think.
Yeah. You're not, you're going to be on a bad foot with them if you do that. You know,
yeah.
You only do it when you need to.
Yeah. I mean,
except with the spirits of Mars. The spirits of Mars appreciate the weaponry. They
yeah.
Like it, you know?
Sure. Yeah. They're all about war and fighting, right?
They, so. Yeah. They don't like me to approach with the little.
Like, what? Yeah.
You know, like, yeah. Yeah. Like, pull your knife out. Let me see that.
Yeah. Yeah. How big is your knife?
Yeah. Let me see how big your knife is.
Oh, so, my God.
Can
yeah.
I kiss your knife, bro? Can I hold it?
Yeah. But your knife is pretty dope. Yeah. So, okay. I mean, it's also just wielding authority, right?
Like, yes, it's wielding. Yeah, it's wielding authority. And wielding the God names, too. Like, the God names are pretty essential. You know, I think the most important God names to be using are the Tetragrammaton. And then AA is incredibly yeah. important. I'm sure anybody out there, you may not know, like if you're just beginning, like how incredibly important AA is, but AA is very powerful for you. You know, like that is what is going to.
That, is that you, the God in you? Is that what that is? Well,
it's so that was the name that God used when Moses spoke to the burning bush. Yeah.
What? Yeah. That story.
Yeah. Yeah. So
I think people were on a lot of drugs back then. I'm serious. I just think yeah. they're on hallucinogenics.
Yeah.
Or who knows? But okay, what did he say?
He said, "Aye, Asher."
About what? What was he saying?
Well, Moses asked for his name, and he said, "Aye, Asher."
The burning bush told him that.
That was it.
Okay. Okay. So. I mean, I'm not knocking it. Like, even if they were on hallucinogenics, you still get shit.
Yeah.
You know, you get information. So maybe that's what it was. But that's so there's that's one of the thousand different God names that we have.
There's quite a few. If you look it up, like if you Google Kabbalah, 10 God names, there's a God name associated with each Sephiroth, and those are good ones to like start out with. But I mean, like if you just like bare bones, basic. Like Tetragrammaton, AA, and Adonai, you can go far with that. You know?
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Adonai, I got from Eastern Star.
Yeah. Yeah. So Adonai is like you when you're dealing with like earthly stuff, right?
Okay.
So I mean, to step back though, so we normally, like when we cast our protective circles, those ones are really simple, incredibly simple.
Yep.
Right.
Yes.
And we do that with visualization.
Right.
Except, right. Mm-hmm. We're dealing with stuff that's closer to us. Right.
Okay. Yeah. You mean like, what do you mean? Which ones?
Land spirits.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. Like things that are on the same realm. Like, or whatever. Yeah.
Yes.
So. Yeah, I mean, I guess most people do it, I think. I mean, I don't know. Maybe, I mean, I've always done it. Like, in the very beginning, I did it, like, I would draw it out, you know, literally, physically, but not actually draw it, but just, you know, walk around and do a circle.
Yeah.
I don't do that anymore. I just close my eyes. Not even close my eyes, just see it.
Yes.
But we did do a actual circle out in Sedona.
Yeah, so I would encourage if you were to work with anything infernal or anything that dealing with the land, you probably probably want to do a physical circle.
Those are how do I even say, like, they're different. The ones that are here, like and like that we see all the time and don't believe we see them. Like, those are different, and those have a different way of getting at you too, especially like Native American stuff. Like pretty intense.
And then like once you start dealing, like the astral layer is the layer that's just like right above us.
Yeah, and they're like parasitic.
Everything else.
Right?
Yeah. So it's like once you get to that layer, that's when the visualization is fine. You're dealing with celestial things, you're dealing with things made of light, or you're dealing with like like shadow people, astral things, like visualization is all you really need for the protective circles.
Yeah. Yeah. And then like you, when you're doing that in your mind's eye, like you just should, so I guess some people have a difficulty seeing things in their mind's eye. Mm-hmm. Okay. And this one's not the same as what you were saying when people just didn't understand the question. The actual visualization part is missing, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
That's crazy to me. I'm sorry if that's the case. But how do you do it if that's the case? If you can't visualize. Can you imagine
a circle around you?
I can, of course. But like, there's a lot of people, I guess 30 to 50%, that can't. So how do they do it then?
If I asked somebody to draw themselves with a circle around them, they'd be able to do it, right?
I don't know. I'm saying, like, that's what they should see, right? Is a circle. Like,
that's got to come from somewhere when they draw it on the paper.
Right. Yes. That's a very good point. Yeah. Right. Yeah. I mean, unless they're just literally copying what you're saying and, like, here's person and here's circle, and they don't actually see it in their mind's eye when they're drawing it.
Yeah.
But that is, you know, and then also, like, if you are
well, if you in can't the- visualize it, just do the physical one. There.
Yeah.
There, okay. There's the answer.
Yeah. Okay. But, like, the physical one, you actually draw it out with some material.
Yeah. So, I think it's, like, really popular with ceremonial magicians. They'll have giant cloths that have, like, you can buy them online that have the circle that they want to use that they throw on the ground when they...
Well, that's easy.
Yeah. But...
Yeah. I saw a guy that made one on cardboard.
Yes.
On TikTok. It was pretty good, actually.
Yeah, but obviously there's a lot of power that goes into the making them and drawing them. I know I do, like, when I make my circles digitally, I make sure that I'm in
a zone.
It, well, I'm in Illustrator at the planetary hour at the kind of thing.
Yeah, it's important.
Yeah, right. So it's like, even if I'm making the circle on a digital medium, there's still some timing or ritual component that's going into me actually making the thing. And then when they like get engraved or whatever it is, that happens at the right time too. Yes,
seriously, it does. I know. Because even if it's 3 or 4 in the morning, you're up here doing it.
Yeah, but making these things yourself, like designing your own, hopefully watching this is going to inspire you to try to make your own with your understanding, because we've ironed out a few different components that you need to get access to the spirits within your pantheon or within your practice using this tried and true technique, right?
Yeah. And then also if you end up, you know, saying, oh, I don't want to spend the time, like, you know, drawing it, or I'm not artistic or something, right? Fine. But, you know, at least like if you get one that's pre-made, I'd say, right, that you're throwing on the ground, whatever, you should then, like, beforehand go over it yourself, like just trace your finger around it or something, you know, like do it so that your energy's on it.
Mm-hmm.
If that's the beginning state, like that would should be the beginning for you, but ultimately you should get to the point where you're making your own, I guess, because like with anything in magic, in my opinion, personally, anyways, it's always better and always more potent when you add your own little elements to it.
So your magic is, and this is like a really strange thing, but your magic is only as strong as your understanding. That's right. The more that
for some people, I think they do things without realizing that they're doing it.
And you're talking like a Carrie situation where they like have like a PK explosion or whatever.
No. Sure, but no. But like I was talking about, like, just the some people have the ability to just say something and it happens.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
and like they don't even understand that that's what's happening. People around them might see it. But, you know, so, but typically, yes. Typically, it's only as strong as.
So, like, when you're making these things, you're participating in understanding. Like, you are cementing, like, your experience, your philosophy, your cosmology. Your magic, and it's all coming together in this circle, and the circle when you make your own circle, utilizing, like, you're getting hands-on and you're seeing your magical practice like come together in this symbol, and that is an incredibly powerful thing.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah. Like for me, that would be the equivalent of like writing my own spells. Like I mean I early on would use ones that were pre-written, but very quickly.
Yeah.
Even as a teenager, I was writing my own. I was just looking at a template, you know, using it as a template. Now I just make my own. Like, I don't even use templates anymore. And they work better, you know, more concise to what I was like hoping for. So I think the personal touch on it is absolutely important. And also it does, it reinforces your understanding of it too. And then also it also, I think, signals out to the powers that be that you're serious about what you're doing.
Well, they hand you, the thing is, when you start making these, like, if you're like, okay, like, these are the things that I practice and I want to make a magic circle so that I can like summon a spirit into it or whatever you want to do with it, right? I want to make a magic circle to charge magical items, right? Yep. That's something that you can do with these things, you know? And you sit down and you start piecing it together, and then that kicks in this process of synchronicity to where then all of a sudden you're getting handed information that helps you build this complete, and you're sitting there and you're looking at it, and there's like all these like layers to it that you like, how did this come out of me, you know?
Right.
Like when you sit down with that intention, when you're actually doing it, right?
That's what happens. Definitely those little eureka moments, or like the little moments you get in your head where something pops in, you're like, oh, you know, yeah, absolutely. That's a good sign that you're on the right track, right?
Yes.
Yeah, when those things start happening for you. But you make these, though, for people that don't have materials to make them like this.
I make the scrying plates. Put the circles on these scrying plates, and they're with the associated metals. So this is pewter. So this has lead in it, right? Lead is the metal associated with Saturn. So basically you just put the crystal in the center in order to conjure Saturn's celestial djinn. I like to use oil lamps in order to conjure spirits. You can put water in it to make a reflective surface to do mirror scrying, that kind of thing. But it's just something that like I like making, and I have a lot of these circles because, you know, there's seven planets and I got seven of these circles. So, but a constant work in progress. And I think the point of tonight's episode was just to show you guys, like, you know, start making these things because it's going to do so much for your practice.
Right. I would say too, like, I know that you have some people that you talk to that theorize a lot on their practice, but don't practice. Mm-hmm. Like, they think about it. I think a lot of people get stuck in this rut. Mm-hmm. Like, where we think about magic we want to do, mm-hmm. or like some, you know, like, this can be a daunting process, like looking at these complex circles and being like, I gotta do this, like, I gotta draw this out. Just do it, try it out, it's about action.
Like what I said before, like, magic starts with action. That's why we do ritual. Okay.
Right.
So it's like, if you're thinking about the chain of manifestation, the four elements, right? Intellect is in third place. Reception is in second place. Action is in first place.
Yeah.
Take the action, receive it.
Act as if. Yeah. You gotta let go.
And I mean, if you do it, that's one of the things that, like, when we do magic, when we do ritual magic together, the ritual starts before we're even...
It's true. Every time.
Before anything happens. It's like the second we're like...
Talking about like...
We're like, oh, like, should we conjure tonight? And then all of a sudden some paranormal thing happens.
Yep. Every time. Almost every time. Yeah. Like, it's uncanny. Like, and even before I know what is going to be...
It's about...
What we're doing.
It's about taking the action. It's like the second I start pulling out the incense and the candles, something happens.
Yep.
Right.
And that's the whole point, is like, the ritual of it is just to reinforce the intention of it and the action of it. Like, it's, that's all it is. It's not, the power is always coming from the practitioner.
So it's like, yes, it's daunting, but the way that it's daunting when you look at it. And I know I rattled off a bunch of information, but the reason I know this information is because I sat down and made a magic circle.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden,
yeah.
Oh, these make sense to me.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I get it now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
And so, like, if you sit down and do it, then it's going to come to you. Right, right. You're going to receive it.
So it's just, yeah. It's like, you know, when you're trying to learn something, right? What do? You do it. You try to teach it to somebody else. If you're having a hard time understanding a concept, you try to figure out how to teach it to somebody else. Mm-hmm. And that way you learn it yourself. And that's like a big trick. And it's an old trick in teaching, right? And like, it's one of those things where, oh, I'm bad at math. Let me try to explain it to somebody else. Mm-hmm. It's like you don't think you can figure these out, then start drawing it so that you can figure it out. It's like a whole thing. It just unlocks something in the brain. It does. Yeah. It really does. It helps you learn. So
I mean, I make these circles in Illustrator, right?
Yeah.
Like, so I do my images, right? The ones that I draw when I'm like in ritual.
Yeah.
But these like really nice, complex, fancy ones.
Yeah,
like,
that's because
I do them in Illustrator and they're fine.
Yeah, they're fine. I mean, work. It doesn't matter if it's like perfect. Yeah. Or, you know, if you're doing it by hand, it doesn't have to be perfect. It just has to.
Oh, yeah. I keep a little saucer for perfect circles.
That's all I like. Yeah. I would say, you know, get something round to trace. Yeah. Okay. For the circle part. But other than that, like you can, you know, just like have your understanding of your own practice and like use what comes to you. Right?
So I know. Yeah. So I know Rufus Opus, like he's really into Zeus and, Greek deities and that kind of stuff. And so when he uses God names, he uses like epithets of Zeus and that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Like, so make it personal for yourself like that, you know, whatever resonates with you. You know, it's just like, this is a template for you to use. Right?
Which is actually, I want to say, I should say, you know, over on Rufus Opus's YouTube channel, he talks a lot about, this kind of stuff too, like like making your own magic circles and how it's a cosmology and it's your cosmology, that kind of stuff. So if you want to go hear what he has to say about it, go check his stuff out. He's going to reinforce a lot of the same things, but maybe a little more clearly than I do.
That's great. So if you guys are interested in like check out his website,
Adam's website.
Yeah. But yeah, I learned a lot. This helped clear some of the things that I hadn't yet fully grasped. So thank you for that.
Magic circles, they're magic.
They're magic. Yes, indeed.
All right.
You've been listening to Discourse, where we venture into the mysteries of esotericism, the occult, and the depths of spiritual exploration. I am Abimon the Great, joined as always by Dr. Anna Stone, bringing adept insights to help guide your journey. Remember, the path of wisdom is illuminated by both knowledge and experience. Until next time, continue your exploration and stay attuned to the unseen.